I'm Tanner Scott, and you are listening to E-Commerce Secrets to Scale. If you want to scale your e-commerce business, you've come to the right place, because this podcast is all about hearing stories and strategies from successful entrepreneurs and e-commerce professionals to uncover scaling secrets that will have a huge impact on your online store. This week on the show, Leo Ebert from Exact Click Digital joins me to talk about ROAS. ROAS is typically the number one KPI that gets reported on. However, most e-commerce brands don't really know what ROAS they need in order to find profitability. Sure, higher ROAS is always going to be better, but it's essential to understand what you can afford to pay for your customer, because the marketing dollars that you're spending today should be an investment for future growth. Welcome to the show, Leo. Super excited to have you. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Tanner. My name's Leo Ebert, and I own a digital ads agency called Exact Click Digital. So we advertise on Google Ads, Facebook Ads, Microsoft/Bing Ads. Been doing that for a long time. You know, we got started. I started the agency back in 2008, and I've been doing it ever since.
That's interesting timing, back in 08. What kind of brought that about, and how was that kind of navigating through a pretty tough recession?
Yeah, well, so I started my career as a CPA, and I worked at a major, one of the top four firms in the world, Deloitte and Phoenix. And I realized pretty quickly that was not my path. I just didn't have a passion for it. And I decided to start a separate business. I actually quit my job to start it. And it was a business that was in the real estate industry. And I did this, 2 months or something before that major housing crash in 2007. Yeah, horrible timing. And so I was kind of like, found myself, I just left a steady job, good benefits, for a business that really had zero chance of succeeding in that environment. So had to kind of reinvent myself pretty quickly. I started doing some side work as an accountant, and some consulting here and there. And wasn't much later that I decided, I think I could make a run at this internet marketing thing. That was very new back then as a brand new industry. And, it was projected for crazy growth, and those projections ended up being right. So I kind of chose a good time to transition into that world.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I can kind of relate. I quit my day job and jumped in with both feet with my agency. I kid you not, 2 weeks before the pandemic broke out. So it was like just impeccable timing. Ended up working out. The pandemic brought a lot of demand for all things digital, right? But yeah, I find that really interesting. My wife is going to school to be an accountant right now, and I'm just like, man, why would anyone want to do that, right?
Right. It's very tedious. But what's interesting is if you look at the demographics of CPAs, it's some crazy number. Like 75% of them are going to retire, they are retirement age right now. So imagine if like 75% of the CPAs are just like, I think I've had my fill, I'm done. That would be a great time to be one of the younger CPAs, because you're going to have more business than you can shake a stick at, right? And you can charge whatever you want. The downside is, of course, you have to really like love nuance and tax code and accounting regulations and all those things to be good at it. So there's good and bad that goes with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. So, kind of going back to when you seemed like your, entire life was falling apart with the new business that didn't work out due to, the giant housing crash, what advice would you give to yourself back then? Is there anything you wish you knew back then? Any advice you give yourself?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I learned from a lot of mistakes. I think, I wouldn't change what I wouldn't tell myself to not quit the job, because I do subscribe pretty heavily to the sink or swim mentality. I think if you, it's kind of like the burn the bridges concept of the conquistadors, it's like, hey, we're we're here to like do the job, and that's the only way home is if we do our job and we can build another boat. So I believe in that, but I think where I probably made mistakes was not even being patient enough with myself and thinking that you have to hit a home run from day one. And like, if you don't hit the home run now, it's, you know, you start to feel panicky and, or being convinced. Like at one point I was like, oh, I'm going to be a multimillionaire by 35. I'm going to be retired. I'm going to hang out on the beach all day. And it's not that you can't do that, but even if you could do that, you probably shouldn't do that. So it's not really I don't think a healthy way to approach your career. It's better to set, you know, aggressive but realistic goals that you can hit, and then as you hit them, reward yourself, and then set better goals, even higher goals. So that's probably what I tell myself is be patient with yourself, you know, make a roadmap and make a roadmap that's something you're going to enjoy doing. Don't just be in a rush to get to some, you know, some independent wealth status that is not going to really change your happiness, because your happiness isn't really dependent on that.
Yeah, well said. And I agree with you with the whole sink or swim mentality thing. I mean, when there's no plan B, I mean, that's when the magic happens, right? So, you know, I encourage anyone I talk to that's kind of thinking about making that leap to just do it. You know, it's not going to be comfortable and it's not going to be easy, but you're going to be glad you did it.
Right. It's, yeah, especially if you're going from a situation where you were doing something that you know is not your path. And you know, that's one reason I quit when I did. You know, when I left Deloitte, it was back in 2007, and I was married, I had a few kids, and I was making, I think, $47,000 a year. And I thought, okay, I'm used to being poor right now. I'm used to being like able to kind of just barely get by with my salary. So I think I can replace that a lot easier than if I were to wait 5 years or whatever the number is. And then I kind of have these maybe golden handcuffs on me where I'm making a lot more money, and trying to replace that is going to be a lot harder, right?
Right,
So
yeah.
there's.
I mean, I think the older you get, the more reasons you're gonna have not to do it, right?
Yeah, totally.
So what was it like? Did you start your agency with zero experience? Did you kind of just have to learn as you went? And ultimately, what do you think has made an impact on your success since day one?
Zero experience. So I the way I got into it is I saw an article in a magazine, and it was this guy sitting poolside in the country of Cyprus, and in the article is all about how he's like, yeah, I use Google to generate leads for local, and then I local businesses to, or sorry, those leads to the businesses, like plumbing leads or you know, whatever it is, any niche within a local business, local area. And I thought, man, that seems really pretty simple. I bet I could do that. Of course, I had no idea how to do that, or what it would entail, or how to get clients. So I had to just initially, I started with, you know, I started asked just scouring forums, online forums. I paid people to show me what they had learned. I convinced a couple of like other young business people. Like I had a friend who was a lawyer at the time. I had another friend who was getting a dentistry, and I was like, look, I will work cheap and just cover my costs. And I'm going to use this as a learning exercise, and you're going to hopefully make some money off of it. And once I did that, I got experience, and I also got some people under my belt that I could say, hey, look, I've done it for them, you know, some referrals, or sorry, some you know, recommendations. So that made a huge impact. And then I guess the biggest thing is not giving up. You know, you can't, if you just keep trying, you keep working at something, especially if you're passionate about it. You're going to be good at it. You're going to get good at it. And if you're good at it, the market is going to pay you well for it, right? So I think that's probably the biggest attribute to my success, is just never being willing to say, I've had enough. I need to go find a job. I'm going to stay the course. I'm going to focus. I'm going to knuckle down and do what I have to do.
Yeah, man, that resilience is really important. And you know, I had a similar experience. Started my agency with zero experience, and I remember the first SEO or marketing client I got, I only charged them $50 a month. And I was just like, you know, I don't care what I make, I just need to get some experience, and it worked out. And you know, you just kind of build from there. So everyone starts somewhere, right?
Right. Hey, you got to be patient with yourself. Like I mentioned before, you have to allow for that. And you don't look at it like, oh, I'm giving my time away cheap. You look at it like I'm buying experience that, you know, it's like you have to be willing to buy that experience, and you're essentially paying money for it. So then you can leverage that later.
Yeah, no question, man. So today we're talking about ROAS and specifically how to calculate what ROAS you should be targeting with your marketing campaigns. First and foremost, Leo, can you explain what ROAS is and ultimately how it's calculated?
Yeah, it's a very simple calculation. It's basically if you view Google or Facebook as a machine, a vending machine, kind of like you put a dollar in, okay, what are you going to get back? That's your ROAS, your return on ad spend. So if I put a dollar of ad spend into the Facebook machine, how many dollars in revenue am I going to get? Not profit, just top line sales revenue. So that's the kind of the most basic KPI that any ad campaign is gonna, be looking at. It's like, all right, how many dollars am I getting back for every dollar that I'm giving to the ad channel, right?
Right. And because it's revenue and not profit, it can be a pretty misleading KPI, right? So, and that's the whole point of this conversation is so we can talk about, okay, well, let's calculate what that break-even ROAS is, right? So when people are looking at their reports, whether they're doing their own marketing or not, they can at least understand what it is that they're looking at and understand that sometimes that, ratio can be somewhat inflated. As opposed to what it actually shows up on your bottom line.
Yeah, right. You have to, that's, yeah, you gotta consider your margins. I mean, some brands have really healthy margins, and so they can afford to use a kind of a lower target ROAS to scale. Whereas other brands, the margins are very tight, and so you don't have a lot of money to play with there. And if you don't take that math into account, you can end up kind of, upside down in your ad spend really fast.
And the crazy thing is, most e-commerce brands don't have a good handle on what their margins actually are.
Yep, that is definitely true. It's not only that. I would say the even bigger problem, more common I see, is what their value is. So if you get sale number one, and you could say, well, I can figure out my margins on that. And a lot of brands can reasonably close, but what they don't do is go the next step and say, what's that person worth to me over the next 5 years? And you really need to know that. You want to have that kind of baked in your front-end ROAS so that you're not leaving scale on the table, right?
Right, because whatever it costs you to acquire a customer right now could be an investment for the future, right? So if it costs you $500 to acquire a customer right now, and I'm just spitballing numbers here, hopefully it's not that high for you, but if that customer is worth $5,000, $10,000 over the next 5 years, that's a pretty good investment for you. But if they buy once and they never come back, and the average order amount is $300, then you're losing money every time you get a customer.
Yeah, exactly. And where it can really, the compounding effects for good or bad is if you don't know that, like say you don't pay attention to that or don't have an understanding of what your LTV is and your competitor does, they're going to probably beat you because they know what they can afford to pay. And they may know, hey, that it's, what say it's $100 to bring in a new customer or whatever it is, $50 to bring in a new customer. Well, if they know that that customer is worth $500 over the next 5 years, they might be willing to spend $100 to get that person, right? Whereas if you're convinced, oh man, this customer is only worth $100 because the cost is $50 to get it, and they spend $100, then you're gonna be shortchanging yourself on that target ROAS, and leaving a lot of money on the table for scale and growth.
Right. And that's why it's so important to look at the bigger picture here so you can actually understand what's happening after you spend your marketing dollars. Because, like you said, your competitors, if they know what they can afford to spend on a customer, they might just outbid you in on keywords and with search ads, right? I mean, how can you possibly tell Google how much you're willing to pay for a click if you don't know what a customer is worth to you over a period of time? You're kind of just trying to get customers for as cheap as possible, and that's not always the best strategy.
Yes, that's so then you run into this. What you'll end up with is, let's say, a brand says, I've got to hit 5x ROAS, and they're just convinced that's the ROAS they have to have. Well, at 5x ROAS, there's a in the universe of ad spend, there's like a finite amount of scale you can get, okay, just because of the nature of the economics of ad spend. Whereas if they were to figure out, oh, they might figure out that their lifetime value is a lot more than they realize. And so if they knew that, they would say, you know what? 4X is plenty. We're actually fine with 4X because we know we're going to make this back in spades over the next several years. Well, that scale that we had at 5X just went up a lot if you can now live with a 4X ROAS. And so, yeah, it's not, sometimes brands will come to me and I'll say, well, what's your target ROAS? And they'll say as high as possible. I'm like, well, that's a recipe for disaster because you're just gonna, I'm like, I could get you 15X ROAS if you want, but there's gonna be no scale to it, you know? So you gotta be, there's like this trade-off and you gotta be willing to make that trade-off to maximize profit.
Exactly. We actually recently had a client scale back on their ad spend. I mean, I'm talking pretty significant here. They went from a 5 or 6 ROAS up to a 20 ROAS, and they're like, oh, this is great. Do you think we can keep this going? Or, why can't we get that ROAS when we spend more? And then, it has to do with the algorithms. There's a finite number of customers out there that are ready to buy from you right now. Scaling that up, you're going to have to take a lower and lower ROAS as you go.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and that's the rub, right? You have to be willing to, you have to say, what are you really trying to maximize? You want to try to maximize ROAS, that's not going to maximize your profit. And that's what most business owners, if they really think it through, like that's what you want. You want profit. You want to maximize the every dollar that you can into that bottom line. The way you do that is not by maximizing ROAS. That will absolutely do have the opposite impact, right? You have to find that ROAS number that will drive the highest return to your bottom line, and because it's going to enable the most scale at profit.
Right, and it's so critical to focus on long term or longevity when it comes to your return on your marketing dollars, rather than just focusing on short wins today, right? That's never going to work, and we really need to, hammer this into people's heads that, it's a long game, and everything you're doing today might benefit you more 6 months from now, right?
Right. And it's, yes, these things will compound. They'll compound in a positive way and a negative way, you know? So you do have to be aware of that. And you can't, it's not, there's no like easy fix, no quick magic wand that's going to fix everything. And you've got to be willing to kind of put in the time, put in the ad spend and figure things out.
Totally agree with you, man. I actually use that ma magic wand phrase all the time. So, what's typically your approach to determining, what the target ROAS should look like? Do you just start with a break-even point, and anything above that is better? What's your approach there?
Well, the first thing I try to get a sense for is what they, yeah, say, well, what do you have a target? And usually a brand will say, yeah, we want to hit whatever number, 5X, 3X, whatever the number is. Okay, so, and then I'll say, well, what's that based on? How did you arrive at that number? So we start trying to back into it. And, if they don't know right away, oh, well, here's how we calculated it. Like, here's our spreadsheet or here's our calculation on it. That means that they've probably just kind of somebody heard from somebody, oh, you need to hit this ROAS in order to make money online. And the reality is, a ROAS, you need to find the right ROAS for your brand specifically. And the way we do that is, and that's where my background as a CPA, especially, is like, I know numbers, like, I know how to do analysis. I learned this back when went through the master's program, like, how do you figure out lifetime value and that kind of thing. So I can help my clients with that calculation. We say, okay, let's gather the data. They need historical data to figure that out. But you pull that historical data out, you do the analysis, you figure out what their margins are, and then you just put pen to paper, so to speak, do the math. And it is always kind of surprising to me how even some very successful brands, they've just never really taken that time to do the math on it and to know for sure what their ROAS should be. Knowledge is power, information is power. So if you get that information, yeah, you're going to be ahead of, I don't know, 90% of the other stores out there because they don't bother to figure it out.
Yeah, no question. I don't think that anyone has ever really paid attention to that. And I think it's they're hiring an agency for a reason, right? They don't know that stuff, and they don't know what they should be expecting to get. I think what typically probably happens is they set their revenue goals, right? And they're looking at, okay, well, if I spend X amount, I need at least a 5X return, but they're not looking at profit. They're always looking at revenue.
Right. Yep. And there's a big difference between profit and revenue.
Huge difference, and depending on the company, they may not really care about profit as long as they're hitting their revenue numbers. As long as revenue is going up, their shareholders are going to be happy.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Leo, what would you say your secrets to scale are?
Well, I mean, first and foremost is, hate to beat a dead horse, but that ROAS number, if you figure out what your ROAS actually should be, what should your target ROAS be, that's the key to everything else. If you can figure that out, then it's just a matter of the normal campaign optimization around that ROAS. And so it's going to be a question of what are your best audiences? What's your best creative? And what's your best offer? All right, you combine those three, then there's like, I mean, you're gonna get the maximum amount of scale that's available for you. Of course, a big part of that is the funnel itself. And by funnel, I'm talking about the advertising funnel, so the funnel within the ads. And the advice I always give clients is we need to start from the bottom of the funnel and work our way up. So what I mean by that is you start with your most high value audience, which is always going to be abandoned carts, people who spend a high amount of time on your website without buying, people who come to your website repeatedly and they just haven't purchased yet. Those are very valuable impressions. So you need to, that's where you start. And then you build up from there. The next level up is going to be people who maybe they're on your email list, but they haven't opened an email in 6 months, or they haven't visited your site in 6 months. They know who you are. They just have kind of forgotten about you. They're probably not even seeing your emails anymore. So you got to re-engage those people. And so you kind of work your way up that funnel, all the way from the most valuable to the least valuable of everybody in that kind of universe of people that even knows you exist. Okay. And once you have that in place, and if that is working well and it's driving the kind of results that you would want to see, then you pour in the top of funnel prospecting traffic. Because if you start with top of funnel, even if you're a brand new store, you can't start with top of funnel until there's other things in place, because you need the ads funnel to pull people through to the final conversion. Most people are not going to buy on their first click, right? They're going to need to see you multiple times. So those are kind of my go-to secrets. Definitely figure out your ROAS and then make sure you build your funnel starting from the bottom and working your way up.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, speaking of the funnel, I mean, you're talking about, showing your ads to hot prospects at the bottom, cold prospects at the top. And that's precisely why it costs you more and more to acquire customers, or you get less return on your marketing dollars as you scale up, because there's only so many hot prospects out there, right?
Right.
And I just want to add on to the ROAS conversation here. Knowing what that threshold is for when you start making profit with based on whatever ROAS you figure out with your calculation. I mean, that just provides so much clarity to know, okay, this isn't as high as I would like it to be, but we're still making money, right? Whereas if you don't have that information handy, I mean, you're sounding the alarms when you really don't need to, right? If you get a report and you're showing a ROAS of 3, but last week it was 5, if you know your numbers, 3 could still be, just fine, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really, yeah, it does give you that peace of mind, because if you know the number's cold and you know the math is good, then you're going to make sound decisions. But if there's always that question mark of, well, we think this is what our ROAS should be, then there's always going to be doubt. Even when the ROAS is good, you'll always be wondering, well, what if that number is not really accurate? What if our ROAS target should be higher? So it's really key to kind of have that just very dialed in and know for a fact what it should be.
Yeah, and I think that, oftentimes clients are always kind of just seeking a higher and higher ROAS, and they'll jump from agency to agency in order to get there. But I think that's just another reason why it's important to know your numbers. You know that, okay, we're really profitable, and you don't have to just keep chasing higher and higher numbers, because ultimately that's going to hurt your brand a lot.
Yeah. You don't want to get in the mistake where you're just playing, ad agency carousel. I mean, I understand if you got to have results, you need to see what you want to see, but there's also that element of consistency, and you want to give enough time to make sure that things have had a chance to get dialed in and to where you need to see them. Whereas if you're always rotating to someone new, it's like you think you're going to find this home run. But invariably the time will come when you're like, oh, they were doing great before, and now we've had a bad month or 2 bad months in a row, we need to jump ship, right? And then you're just going to find yourself right in the same boat again.
Yeah, and typically that just means that there's a bigger problem that needs to be solved too.
Yep.
But anyways, Leo, I appreciate you taking the time to do this interview with me today. Is there anything that I did not ask you that you think might benefit the audience?
Only other thing I'd mention is testing creatives and being methodical about that. You'd be surprised sometimes how the things you would expect to be the best creative are not always the best creative. And so just being willing to try something unique, it's got to be on brand, of course, but unique things might really surprise you. So just being always having a piece of your budget set aside for testing can make a huge difference in your long-term success.
Yeah, I mean, testing is really everything when it comes to digital, right? The things that you would not have expected to perform well are always the things that do way better than what you thought would work better, right? So I do think that's really important, and hopefully the audience can incorporate that into their marketing. So Leo, thanks again. What's a great way for anyone listening to get in contact with you?
Yeah, my website, of course, exactclickdigital.com. That's probably the best way. I've got a couple of free guides on there if people are wondering how to audit your own accounts to see how things are going. Kind of look under the hood, but you're not sure how. There's a video series that walks you through how to do that. So yeah, exactclickdigital.com, and then at the very top, you'll see a link to the guides.
Awesome, man. Well, we will be sure to link that up in the show notes. And thanks again, Leo.
All right, thank you so much, Tanner.
Thank you for listening to another episode of E-commerce Secrets to Scale. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss another episode. This podcast is sponsored by Ranksy Digital Marketing. If you own an e-commerce business and you're ready to take it to the next level, visit our website at ranksy.com. That's RANKSEY.com.